Well, it's going. There.
So. You have such a way with starting podcasts.
Yeah. Other people might have a little bit more class, you know. So, but it's like, I'm always like, you know, it seems like I don't push the button right or something that's not going. So I have to watch for the numbers. We're reading Gaia's Garden again.
After almost 2 years.
It's been a long time. And I think that, I thought we had one chapter left, but as we go and we're doing all the analysis, it's like, no, we've got three chapters left. And before I was reading just out of the first edition and you're reading on the second edition, but this time for the rest of it, we're just going to do the second edition. So we're not going to be able to tell who's got what different or whatever.
Right. And this is chapter 10 of Gaia's Garden by Toby Hemingway.
Yeah. Growing a food forest.
Yes. Yes. So, and he's building upon all the little pieces he's gone through in the book. And now he's saying, okay, yes, you can do guilds. You have plants for all these different purposes in your guilds. And now you combine them into a food forest. And of course, this whole book is focused on a guide to home scale permaculture. So he's mostly talking about a suburban or urban style lot when he's talking about the food forest in this chapter.
Right. And in fact, he kind of mentioned zone one, zone two stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
three. Yeah.
Yeah. But now, I've marked off some pieces that I want to share and I think that if we comment on and if we actually quote 10% or less of the book, I think that that's considered, you know, fair play in the world of copyright. And but still, you know, emphasize that in fact, you know what? For this chapter as a whole, one of the best pieces of this chapter is the great big table in the middle of the chapter going over a variety of species and what their use is, which is something we can't really review in a podcast.
Right.
So I guess my point is buy the book.
Well,
and then that way, you know, Toby and Chelsea Green aren't going to get mad at us. Like measuring the number of words and stuff like that. Did they really do less than 10%?
Well, I think we talked about that before and talked about all the appendix resources in the back of the book too. It's just a wealth of information.
Yeah. So it's a book that has a dual function. I mean, one function is you go through and you read it, get an understanding of the general permaculture stuff, but really you come back to it 150 times later to help you decide what you're going to plant.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the very first paragraph in the chapter, gardening with guilds brings us one step closer to landscapes that look and act like natural ones, but that have been tweaked to benefit people as well as the rest of nature. However, even guilds are just pieces of a larger whole. Now it's time to tie guilds and the other ideas presented in this book into a unified, ecologically sound landscape. And then a little later he says, when not interrupted by fire or other disaster, the end result of succession nearly everywhere is forest. So, of course, forest is what we're shooting for. Only, you know, the emphasis is being food forest, so something that's going to be productive, something that's going to be have a lot of edible bits and bobs to it. But I think that a big part of it is that he's trying to say that if you set it upright, it's going to be pretty self-maintaining.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I liked, you know, at first it sounds like he's just talking about trees, but I like that. And at one point he says, because trees are a major element integrated into and defining the other layers. And he goes on later on that page to say, trees' ability to produce soil-enriching leaf litter, fill the earth with humusy roots, quell temperature swings, hold moisture, arrest erosion, and offer tiers of habitat for animals is unparalleled, and in the forest garden, they're on our side. So, I mean, there's more. He's just lyrical about how the trees are the foundation of a food forest.
I marked off that same piece, and it goes on to say, and for productivity, you can't beat trees. An acre of wheat provides a mere 1 to 2 tons of grain, while an acre of chestnut trees yields up to 3 tons of nuts, and an acre of honey locust trees explodes, boom, baby, explodes with 15 tons of protein-rich pods without annual replanting. Apple and other fruit tree yields could reach 7 tons per acre, although much of this is water weight. But even dried apple yields can match those of dry wheat. Compared to grains and other annuals, the vastly greater expanse of energy harvesting greenery of trees gives them an unbeatable advantage.
Yeah, he's broken it down by the numbers, and the yields just keep increasing with most tree crops for decades. So it's really, when you consider the energy output of planting those annual crops versus perennial tree crops, it's amazing.
I was kind of hoping that he was then going to break it down and to say how many tons of food you get out of some polycultures, or maybe he would know of some polyculture examples. I mean, he's talking about, I think he's got 3 different examples that he's mentioned in this chapter. He does a lot of Jerome Ostankowski stuff in Colorado,
right,
which I've been to Jerome's. And I thought that the greenhouse was impressive. But some of the other stuff is kind of like, I just wasn't getting it. I wasn't feeling it. It was definitely the world of a plant geek, but, not.
Well,
I was, you know, there were other things where it's like, what? Really? I'm not getting what. And even here, Toby's mentioning some of the things, and it's kind of like, yeah, I remember seeing that, and I remember thinking like, why did you do that? I can see what has been done. I see it right there. And it's like, I'm not seeing benefit. Mm-hmm. I'm not like, where's the return on effort?
Mm-hmm.
But you know, maybe I'm a doofus. Maybe I'm too dumb to be able to detect it. But the greenhouse he had up there was spectacular and interesting, fascinating and amazing.
Well, speaking of, Toby republished this book in 2009, and he visited quite a few sites with the first edition of the book, and then visited more with the second edition of this book. But, you know, it's been 4 years since 2009 even, and a little bit.
Five years.
Thank you for the good math. In a little bit later in the chapter, he says that temperate climate food forest gardening, or temperate climate forest gardening, is a new field, and only a few mature forest gardens exist in this on this continent. You know, and I think that's changed dramatically in 5 years. But you can't really get a mature forest in 5 years, though, either.
Yeah.
So it takes a while. I think that's interesting.
You know, I want to back up a little bit. Yeah. There's a couple of things that were a little earlier on that I marked off that I wanted to share. At its essence, a forest garden has several layers, as does a natural forest. A simple forest garden contains a top layer of trees, a middle layer of shrubs, and a ground layer of herbs, vegetables, and flowers. And so, I mean, the thing is that different things get things at different levels of sun and whatnot. And some things are shade tolerant and some things are not. But, you know, edge, and layers. Mm-hmm. So, and then the next bit I've got marked off here is that with a tree-filled forest garden, we have enlisted as our allies the most powerful and productive vegetation on the planet, the aristocrats of the plant world. Dun, dun, dun. So trees.
Yes.
Trees,
yes.
Kick ass.
Yes. Yes. And he has nice designs and plans for a couple different forest gardens, one with a sun scoop design, one that's more of just a rectangular design that might fit into a suburban or urban lot.
He's got a bunch of stuff here that's taken from How to Make a Forest Garden by Patrick Whitefield. And he gives mm-hmm. proper props to Patrick Whitefield throughout this. And then he starts talking about some of the stuff that he has witnessed at the Bullock Brothers farm.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, he... and there's a brief history sidebar where he talks about Robert Hart as well as Patrick Whitefield and how when some people first saw more subtropical or tropical forest gardens, they really didn't understand what they were. So
it's like in the Poisonwood Bible, it was kind of like,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, they didn't understand it. And it took a while. It took a lot of observation for people to figure out that this wild stuff really had lots of value and had been cultivated.
So my next thing is on page 216. Do you have anything before that?
I do. I mean, I just, it was really fun to hear, Toby talks about how he asked Jerome about all his plants. And there's a big long list, I don't want to read it off now, of all the different, different layers of food forest plants that he had. So it's an excellent example, I think, of food forest plants.
Okay.
That's all.
So, the thing I've got marked off, is to go into the seven story garden. So,
yes.
So earlier he mentioned a simple food forest mm-hmm. has three layers. And so now he's going to go into the seven layer garden. It's time to look at forest garden design. A simple forest garden contains three layers, trees, shrubs, and ground plants. But for those who like to take advantage of every planting opportunity, a deluxe forest garden can contain as many as seven tiers of vegetation. As the illustration below shows, it's actually kind of above, isn't it?
Yeah.
A seven-layered forest garden contains tall trees, low trees, shrubs, herbs, ground covers, vines, and root crops. All right. So then I selected a little snippet out of, because he goes on to talk about each layer in greater detail. And then there's the great big table. And so the first layer, of course, the tall tree layer. Dense spreading species, the classic shade trees such as maple, sycamore, and beech, don't work well in the forest garden because they cast deep shadows over a large area. Better choices are multifunctional fruit and nut trees. Next one, the low tree layer. Naturally small trees such as apricot, peach, nectarine, almond, medlar, and mulberry. The shrub layer, blueberry, rose, hazelnut, butterfly bush, bamboo, serviceberry, the nitrogen-fixing Eleagnus species, and Siberian pea shrub, and dozens of others.
Yeah.
The next one is the herb layer. Here, herb is used in the broad botanical sense to mean non-woody vegetation. Vegetables, flowers, culinary herbs, and cover crops, as well as mulch producers and other soil-building plants. Emphasis is on perennials, but we won't rule out choice annuals and self-seeding species. Okay, number five, the ground cover layer. Sample species include strawberries, nasturtium, clover, creeping thyme. What the hell is ajuga? Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah. Ajuga.
Ajuga?
It's kind of a purpley-leaved ground cover.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And the many prostrate varieties of flowers such as phlox and verbena. The vine layer. This layer is for climbing plants that will twine up trunks and branches, filling the unused regions of the all-important third dimension with food and habitat. Here are food plants such as kiwi fruit, grapes, hops, passion flower, and vining berries. These can include climbing annuals such as squash, cucumbers, and melons. And finally, the root layer.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the plants for the root layer should be shallow rooted, such as garlic and onions, or easy to dig types, such as potatoes and Jerusalem artichokes. Deep rooted varieties, such as carrots, don't work well because the digging they require will disturb other plants. I do sprinkle a few seeds of daikon radish in open spots because the long roots can often be pulled with one mighty tug rather than dug. And if I don't harvest them, the blossoms attract beneficial bugs and the fat roots add humus as they rot.
Yeah. Then he has more tips on how to, what to consider in your design process and how to design for zone 1, zone 2, and zone 3, to have the nursery, to have a nursery or propagation bed, he thinks is really important. And especially have that in zone 1 near the house. And then you had a piece
highlighted
out of there.
I'm glad that there's going into the detail. I mean, part of me is like, as I'm reading through this, I'm kind of thinking like, I've seen Toby teach,
mm-hmm.
and I've, I've tried to observe many other instructors to see how they do. And of course, the 7 layers have been talked about many, many times. So I'm trying to, I feel like I don't have a lot to say. And I'm kind of thinking back to myself like, wow, we're just cruising through this chapter so fast. Usually we have like so many comments and things to say, but I don't know anymore. Maybe if I had done this years ago, I'd have more to say, but I kind of feel like this has been said so many times, but if you're new to permaculture, then this is, I mean, I do think that he's done this is an extremely polished presentation on this.
Well, and all the other chapters led up to, you know, getting you to the point where you can do a food forest design. So we've already discussed a lot of the other elements. So in a way, this chapter is almost like a summary and review.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I liked this. Many parents opt to preserve an expanse of lawn for children to play in. But once the forest fills in, I guarantee that the kids will abandon the open grass for the more enchanting shrubbery, a perfect place for hideaways and forts. The lawn can be kept just big enough for a little sunbathing. It doesn't say whether it's nude sunbathing or not. I guess that's your own option there.
But that is an interesting perspective on how kids would play. So,
and then a little later on, he does make a good point, which is something I don't think is said often enough, and that is, remember, the wisest strategy is to get zone 1 established first and then expand outward. I think too often people try to do it all at once.
True.
Yeah.
True. And all along, he does offer lots of good tips on how to start out partway, how to sheet mulch zone 2, cover crop zone 3, different strategies like that for making it easier.
And then here's a picture of a garden by Larry Santoyo.
Yeah. He made another point about how the food forest evolves. And he said, but, you know, as opposed to a garden of annuals or a single layer perennial garden, he said the difference is in a forest garden, the lifespans of many of the occupants are measured not in 1 year, but in decades or more. So you really are planning very differently.
So the last bit that I have marked off in the chapter is, when the garden is young and the scattering of freshly planted trees is at the twig farm stage, the sunny spaces between seedlings can be filled with annual and perennial vegetables and flowers. In a year or three, the shrubs and berry bushes will begin to show their true colors and fruit. And for the next 5 to 10 years, before the trees cast much shade, they will be at peak form. So basically talking about how to transition in time, the fourth dimension. So yes. Your three-dimension design and your fourth dimension design.
Well, and Toby is just so good at being aware of not just the human ecosystem, but the full ecosystem. That he makes a comment, too, that these rhythms and diversity are augmented by the movement of wild plants into the forest, both so-called weeds and unusual natives. And the gardener, after observing the newcomer, can vote on whether it should stay or go. So I liked that, too. It's kind of like being in concert with the whole ecosystem.
So, I like the way that we're going and we review these books this way. So we read a bit and then we do a little bit of a review. I feel like I've done a really crappy job of reviewing this section. I mean, he does a very good job of condensing it into a chapter. Whereas there are books, and he points out what books. There are books, you know, that this is what the entire book is about. And so, but at the same time, I kind of feel like I feel like I suck today. Like somehow I'm not doing a good job. I haven't found anything to add to it really or to contribute.
Well, yeah, I think because it was in summary and part of the chapter was tables and it was, you know, it was pretty straightforward. And I think a lot of people who have been studying permaculture get food forest design as well. So. Yeah.
I like doing the book reviews in this fashion, and we do have two books that are not in the regular podcast stream. The only way to be able to get them, where we did like, I think a 10 podcast review of Just Enough, and I think about the same size of a podcast review, with 10 or so for Botany in a Day. And so those two are just available out at Scubly. They're not part of the regular podcast stream. Although I do think that for each one, we did include one chapter or one of the podcasts in the regular podcast stream. And I just kind of thought like it might be a little much to put in to the regular podcast stream. And so, but other people seem to enjoy it. So it's out there for people to get. And I'm kind of thinking that, about doing more books that way. Although I kind of think that the number of people that have actually gone out and gotten those 10 podcast reviews hasn't been that many. And so maybe we ought to put our time into something else.
I don't know. I think we've had more requests for you to interview other people than we've had requests for you to do more book reviews.
Yeah.
But I think if nothing else, the book reviews are good for us to study more permaculture stuff and dive into it. And for the people who are listening to podcasts, just to be listening to more things about permaculture and to getting to know you better, it's more fodder that way. So.
And today was supposed to be a day where we're going to go back out on the land, but it was quite the blizzard today.
Yes, it is a Sunday today.
And recording equipment doesn't do well with watery things falling from the sky.
It's true. And we had a lot of rain yesterday, which turned the top layer of snow to ice and then more snow today on top of that.
Yeah, yeah. So, and plus, it's been so long. I like the idea of wrapping up this project.
Yes. Yes. So we have two chapters left.
Yep. All right. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com where we talk about Gaia's Garden, homesteading, and permaculture
all the time.